Welcome to Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm Rolling Stone executive editor Nathan Brackett. Today we're going to hear from Sting about his return to rock. And also we're going to talk about some new music by Lady Gaga. And that was a little bit of Perfect Illusion, which I freaking love. But Lady Gaga's new song, and probably my favorite Lady Gaga song in at least 2 or 3 years.
Definitely.
I'm here with Brittany Spanos. Hey, Brittany.
Hey.
Catch us up with Lady Gaga.
So it's been 3 years since Gaga released her last solo album, and everyone's been really looking forward to what she was going to do next, especially after doing Standards with Tony Bennett. And she had an Oscar nomination earlier this year. And Perfect Illusion is the first single off of her new album, Joanne, which is coming out in October.
It was produced by
Mark Ronson.
Okay,
and
this one is
Blood Pop,
right.
I believe.
Yeah. Right. Mark Ronson is on a lot of the songs on this new album.
Yeah, it seems like he's her primary collaborator. He started talking about them working together a little bit after the Oscars, and he was talking about how it's going to be a really analog album, and she started to announce a lot of collaborators on it, like Beck will be on the album, Florence Welch, Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age plays guitar on this song. Kevin Parker from Tame Impala also.
So there's a lot of rock on this record.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't wait to hear it. She's always had that side.
Yeah, I've definitely been waiting for her to do even more with it because she always sings about her background sort of in the, like, Lower East Side, like, punky, dirty rock and roll scene that she was in when she was, like, in college and in her early 20s. And it's really always been a thematic element in all of her music.
Right. But exactly, like kind of in the background, yeah.
Yeah, like sort of like referencing her like sort of rock and roll friends. And she did a lot of work with like Semi-Precious Weapons, but she's never really done it in her music too much except for maybe Edge of Glory.
Right.
And like a little bit on Born This Way.
Right.
But,
and maybe, yeah, a little bit of the piano stuff here and there.
For sure.
You're right.
And so this is really her like first big foray into creating a song that's more rock, less pop.
Right.
Yeah.
So catch us up with her path over the last few years because, you know, she was queen of the world and I'm a big fan. I feel like nobody like makes use of pop spectacle, you know, in the way that she does as, like over the last decade and actually has like a true like artist's sense too.
Definitely.
But she definitely had a heart. You know, speaking of art, she had like a pretty rough time with the whole art pop record.
Yeah. I mean, she's always been pop's big weirdo ever since she came out, but art pop was really her going more into her avant-garde side and a lot of references to the fashion world, which she's always been a part of, but it really played a big part into art pop and the rollout of it and the themes on that album and the sound of it. But
and it didn't have a huge single.
It didn't have a huge single, and it really just didn't click with a lot of people. I think there were definitely some standout tracks on the album, but it was a lot of hit and miss with, like, she had, like, a trap song on there that didn't do too well, and, like, a lot of the singles just, like, really didn't hit the way that a lot of her past ones had, you know, skyrocketed through and hit number one or sold millions of copies, but
so she kind of retrenched after that and kind of got out with Tony Bennett. And, like, I mean, one of the things about her is I think people don't often give her credit for how musically talented she really is. She's, like, a great songwriter, and she's just a really killer singer. I mean, on another level from somebody like Madonna. No offense to Madonna, but she, like, makes use of kind of a limited instrument. Lady Gaga can really sing and really play. Like, so I felt like the Tony Bennett thing was just, like, the perfect thing for her to do.
Yeah, because that especially didn't come across to people who didn't see her live, really. I think that people didn't know how much of a singer she was until they, you know, had the chance to see her live or really watch videos of her. So the public didn't really get to see that side of her and that weren't, like, fans or, you know, engaged within that way. But her Tony Bennett album, Cheek to Cheek, was, it won them a Grammy together. Like, she toured that for a really long time. And her first solo song in a while was Till It Happens to You with Diane Warren, who co-wrote it. And it was for the documentary The Hunting Ground. And then that got them an Oscar nomination. And that was a huge moment for her, really coming back to her solo career and launching into this next phase and made people really hungry for what was coming next.
Right. She kind of went and did something that, like, somebody like Ariana Grande, no offense, you know, couldn't do. You know what I mean? She went and, like, not many pop singers can go and just do, like, a standards tour, you know, with this jazz legend and be credible.
And want to exit the pop world so you know, in such a big way and such, you know, leaving that behind to do club tours and like being with Tony Bennett and everything. And that was really great to see her explore that side of her, you know, musicality and her voice and getting to show that off for a while.
Right. Well, let's see what happens with this record. And she's back. Brittany Spanos, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Where could you be on such a lonely winter's night? I can't stop thinking about you.
I can't stop wanting you this way. And that was I Can't Stop Thinking About You by Sting. The new song by Sting and probably the most Police-like thing he's done in a long time.
Yeah, maybe since Synchronicity.
I'm here with Patrick Doyle. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Nathan.
You talked to Sting, one of the ultimate, the most rock-starry rock stars of the 80s and 90s, even though he has another side that he often shows us involving lute and jazz music, but he's come back to rock.
Yes, thank God.
So tell us what's been going on with Sting. Catch us up. He's always got a lot going on.
Well, Sting, since in the last 10 years alone, I think he did a symphony album, a lute album, Broadway play.
The Last Ship.
The Last Ship that he spent the last 5 years, you know, until about 2014. That was, you know, his main project. He was, very invested in that. And it made it to Broadway. It didn't last a whole lot of time, but he was, you know, super proud of just the fact that it made it to Broadway. But he's done just about everything. And that's kind of what you have to respect about Sting. Like, even though he is the commercial rock star, pop star, he can... You know, he's adventurous and
purposeful.
Yeah.
And always has something. He's always ambitious, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been on the road this year, right, with Peter Gabriel. You saw him on that tour.
Yeah, I went to see him. When he goes on tour, he basically will do the hits and things that what people want from him. But a little bit of a twist every time. This was with Peter Gabriel, kind of like we did with Paul Simon a couple years ago.
Where so he's not bringing like Branford Marsalis out in the road.
Right, no. Yeah. He did a symphony tour, though, and that was actually pretty interesting, the Symphonicities tour. But he shared a band with Peter Gabriel. They did Genesis stuff. They did Sting stuff, Peter Gabriel stuff. It was very cool because you were never really bored because they kind of switched off after a couple songs. And so it was kind of a little bit different than you'd expect from them. So that was at Madison Square Garden, and Sting was in great shape there.
He looks like Sting. He looks fit.
Yeah.
Tell me about this new album, because I do like this single. This is probably my favorite Sting song in a while.
The album is called 57th and 9th. Which is actually just the intersection that he had to cross all the time to get to all these different studios in New York, which is just, it's kind of a weird title.
Be careful, Sting.
Yeah. And so I met him with him at Avatar Studios, which is where he was finishing up the record. And he sort of just booked studio time without any music written with members of his touring band. And then this band from Austin called the Last Bandoleros. It was a couple guys from that band. And he just kind of would have musical ideas a little bit, but he didn't have lyrics or anything, and sort of went in and just started playing with them. And he said he booked, you know, an hour or two at a time. It was never a whole lot of time. Just so he would say, we have to do something today, and they would come out with something. And so he likes to be very spontaneous kind of just keep things interesting. So it was very on the fly, live. And he said that was really exciting for him to get back to. He's such a perfectionist that it must be kind of interesting for him to you know.
And he totally owns his perfectionist side, and is just so I love when you ask him about when did it start working for you as an album. And he says it's always working for me, and I have really high caliber musicians, and he's just totally always so committed.
Yeah, I think he has a sense of humor about himself in that sense. He says things deadpan a lot of the time that you don't really realize it until afterward when you're maybe listening to the audio that I think he is a little bit of a grin, at least behind.
So listen to it. All right. So our listeners at home, listen for the jokes.
What does it do for you when you play this more upbeat rock and roll music? What do you get out of it when you
return? It's a workout? for me, again, the most important element in all music is surprise.
Yeah.
So I want surprises within songs.
Yeah.
And I want surprises about the choices I've made for the listener.
Yeah.
So I don't want people to ever be complacent about, okay, you pick up a Sting record and you're not you should never be sure what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And I'm determined that that's the case.
Yeah.
So I will keep throwing these curves, you know. And, you know, largely they comply with popular taste. I've been very fortunate in that. Even though I'm following my whim.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I really am. I do what the fuck I like.
Right, right. Even you, when you came to the U.S., you played for three people, and like, you know, you know what I mean? And then you were doing whatever you wanted to do, and then
people got on. You know, it served me well.
Yeah.
And I'd rather have a hit against the odds than somehow manufacture by some magic formula, you know, what the zeitgeist of, you know, the listener is at the moment. How do I, you know, get in there? I'm much more spontaneous. I'm interested in interesting myself, keeping myself intellectually occupied. It's my journey, and you know, people are welcome to share it with me. But I'm intrigued.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where it's going.
Is it a bug that you sort of get after you haven't done it for a while?
No, I've always got it.
Yeah.
You finish a song and then you're under the next one. You know, that first song you heard is called I Can't Stop Thinking About You. It's really about the muse and looking at an empty sheet of paper like it's a field of snow with no clues on it about what's hidden underneath
mm-hmm.
it. How are you going to get a story? Is there something there? There's something hidden in a void. So that song is a rocker, but it's also got a philosophical puzzle in it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where does inspiration come from?
Mm-hmm.
What is that longing? Is it spiritual longing? Is it intellectual longing? Is it erotic? And what's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
It's all, you know, searching.
To return to that sound as you get older, what is it? Do you approach it in a different way?
That's interesting. I don't know whether I'm a smarter musician than I was when I was 24. I don't listen to my own music, but if I hear it by accident, I go, oh, that was an interesting decision for a 24-year-old to make.
Mm-hmm.
How did you arrive at that? And it was just instinct. Well, but now I kind of know technically what I'm doing, whereas before it was only instinct. So I try not to make that technical knowledge impair what sounds like instinctive music,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's not to get in the way of it. So, you know, I hear stuff by accident and I think, wow, maybe you were smarter than you thought. Or not as smart as you thought. Depending on the example.
And when did you realize it was working and that this could be an album?
It's not the kind of thought I have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's working all the time. But what is its end use? I don't know. Again, it's all about having fun.
Yeah.
So, we still are.
Cool. And what was it like to blend that band with your band? And what did it...
I play with very high caliber of musicians who know how to, you know, morph very, very easily from whatever they're playing, whether mm-hmm. it's rock and roll or jazz or folk music, they can do it. And so I'm blessed enough in
yeah.
a sense. You know.
What was the sound when you blended that, you know, these Tex-Mex guys with your guys? Was there what did it sound like to you that was...
Well, I mean, one of the things that they brought to it were backing vocals. You know,
mm-hmm.
a beautiful blend of... backing vocals that adds to my own, and so it had more of a different texture to what I normally do, because I normally do all of my own.
Mm-hmm.
But this was interesting, and just energy, and just
mm-hmm.
this sense of enthusiasm and freshness.
To get back to that sound after going, you've gone all kinds of different directions over the last 10 years, or a lot more
yeah.
longer than that too. But there's been a lot of interesting albums. And what was it like to sort of?
Well, you know, I don't think I've been in the wilderness. I've just been exploring my whim.
Yeah.
to just do what I want to do, and I think the audience appreciates that most
yeah.
of the time. Say, okay, well, I'm intrigued about what is going to come next, and I like surprises, you know, so perhaps this album would be another surprise, you know, in that series of surprises.
Yeah.
Everybody seems happy with it, you know, it's not a loot album, it's not a folk album. It's something that's more mainstream in a way.
At this point, you ask him about a song that listeners haven't heard yet called One Fine Day off the new album.
Yeah, that's one of the real poppy songs, but when you listen to it, it's a very serious song. He's someone who's sort of dedicated a lot of his time to the rainforest, environmental work and stuff. So this song is kind of along those lines, but he's kind of saying everything will be better one fine day. It's like he's always wondering if that's ever going to happen. So this is where we kind of talk about the future and his sort of dim view of that.
The One Fine Day, was that a song? Because I love what you're talking about in that song, but also I love the melody. Does that one, something like that, come quickly to you?
Does it come quickly? Yeah, it did, actually. You know, it's a kind of a cynical look at, you know, the climate skeptics. And, I actually want to believe them.
Yeah.
More than any, I pray that they're right. In fact, it's just that, you know, a temporary aberration that everything will be fine on a fine day. But, of course, I can't do that.
Yeah.
So the song is that kind of as a response to that, you know, and the claims that, you know, oh, I'm not a scientist. My response is, we'll go and talk to one.
Yeah.
Because they'll tell you, is this your... Oh, this is mine.
Yes.
When they say, like, I'm not a scientist, but I know, like, what do you mean, like, when they say, when you see
well,
them?
Well, they're sort of, it's a sort of way of just bypassing responsibility.
You know, right.
And calling it a theory, as if, you know, all science is based on theory, but it's also based on lots of research.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a basic misunderstanding of the word theory. Mm-hmm. It's not my field. But.
Yeah, yeah. With all the work that you do and you know, trying to preserve the planet and stuff, how are things going right now? Do you
terrible.
Think? Yeah.
It's appalling. You know, recently my opinion is things that are much more much less important. You know, the biggest threat we face. Mm-hmm. Some people might think it's immigration or whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, one of the things driving immigration, there are three things. There's poverty, there's war, and pretty soon the biggest one, the biggest engine to migration will be climate change. Mm-hmm. So you have massive millions and millions of people looking for somewhere safe. This isn't going to go away.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know. Am I pessimistic? I think I'm sanguine about it. You know, this is the biggest problem we have.
Yeah.
So I think it's time our politicians really put their finger out, you know. And that's why I was so depressed yesterday about Britain exiting the EU for no good reason. And at least the EU has a program to tackle things like climate change. But people just want to leave Europe to its own devices, not have any say in what goes down there on larger issues like climate change, like immigration. Completely stupid. So I'm still in a bit of a depression.
Mm-hmm.
We can't be complacent.
Yeah.
Well, you can't be complacent. I don't have a vote, but please don't be complacent.
No.
I think Hillary is amply qualified to lead the country, and she's the most qualified candidate we've had for many years. I know her. I don't find her cold. I don't find her calculating. I think she's a good politician. I think she's a good person. So I'm praying that you will make the right choice.
Indeed.
Do you ever watch Fox News just for the hell of it to see what Trump is up to and stuff?
It's not one of my guilty pleasures, no.
Yeah.
But occasionally I will see it by accident in an airport lounge and be horrified by what I'm hearing. Again, people are, you know, cynically being misinformed about the world for purposes which I don't know.
And there's also a song called 50,000, which is you say is about mortality.
Yeah, he wrote this song the week that Prince died, and it's a song called 50,000 about kind of playing a stadium with someone who's died, and he's sort of, whenever this happens, he sort of has to think about himself. And so he kind of explains what it's basically like to be a rock star and have to say goodbye to a colleague.
50,000. Can you tell me about I mean, it relates to a lot of people.
Including me. Well, I mean, it's really a comment on how shocked we all are when one of our cultural icons dies. Genuinely, where we are in this deep shock, even though they're human beings like we are. Prince and David, to name but two this year, Glenn Frey, Lemmy.
Yeah.
All these people. But we gift them with a sort of spurious immortality. You know, they are our icons, they're our gods in a way.
Yeah.
So when they die, we have to question our own mortality. And even I, as a rock star, have to question my own. So I'm in there too.
Yeah.
And there's a sort of bittersweet realization that all of that hubris doesn't mean anything in the end result. You know, it's all human beings and all vulnerable.
But you stay in, you stay in really good shape and everything. You've taken care of yourself.
I try to.
Yeah. When you, this morning or something, do you exercise? You still exercise in the mornings and everything, right?
Well, you know, I was an athlete when I was a kid and when I was a teenager, so I just kept up my training schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So I do something every day.
Mm-hmm.
Not today, though. All I do is drink coffee and sleep, but I had a show last night.
Yeah. Were you listening to anything in particular? Were you listening to different when you were making this?
Not really. No.
Mm-hmm.
No, I tend to shut myself away and just deal with the problem in hand. And, I think of music, when music without lyrics, for me it's similar to, I imagine, how a sculptor looks at a piece of rock. You know, so what can I recognize, an arm or a leg there, or a nose or something. And you follow those lines in the rock and then you figure out a story. If it's structured right, in an abstract way, it's telling you there's a narrative there, even though it's abstract. You know, it's A, B, C, middle eight, transposed to a key. That's the narrative. It's abstract. So if you can translate that into a story, then that's the best of my work, you know, to make it into a recognizable narrative.
Yeah. So you said you haven't figured out what's running through these songs yet, but have you thought about it at all?
There's a lot of stuff about emigrating. Our natural state, I think, is to see what's over the hill. Is there any better over the hill, any safer? You know, I was a migrant from my hometown to London, from London to here. And linked to this, there's a song on the album about refugees, you know, trying to get to Europe. But there's a lot of road songs.
Mm-hmm.
And then this Petrol Head is a sort of satire of, you know, the American trucker, that kind of macho mentality.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, told with love, but it's a satire.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking for, just commercial expectations, or what are you thinking about?
You know, the record industry is in a state of chaos and flux at the moment, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know. I mean, the right model hasn't really presented itself yet. I think streaming is probably the way it's going, but it's not equitable yet.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it will be one day. So I've no idea what expectations are. We just, you put a record out and hope for the best.
Yeah.
But it's not like the old days when it's, you know, how many million? Many million.
What do you think of rock and roll right now? Or is there anything? Is it sort of new bands and things like that?
It's become a kind of traditional form, and it's still very healthy, I think. And there's plenty of stuff coming up. It's just that it's not as socially cohesive as it used to be. You know, when I was a teenager, first buying records, there were maybe two or three releases a week, a month even. And so you were playing the same records as everyone around you. And you were, you know, either a Rolling Stones fan or a Beatles fan or a Kinks fan or whatever. Now it's so diffuse and so many choices that it's not the cohesive force that it was for my generation.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say it's not as important, but it's just fragmented, mm-hmm. and it's confusing. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing or a good thing. It's just different. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have to roll with it. I like the fact that vinyl is coming back.
Yeah.
It's a great idea. I like the ritual of taking the record out of its inner sleeve and placing it lovingly on the turntable and putting the needle on and hearing the white noise. I miss that. I think, you know, when you get your music out of something that size and the sound quality is not great.
Yeah.
But things will improve, as I say. I think the model will come, will be equitable for musicians and equally consumers of music, and, you know, that's in the future.
Yeah. I was reading back a bunch of your Rolling Stone articles from the past, and the one you did in, like, around 07 when you brought the Police back on the road, and you said, I'm interested where this will go in my mind musically, what I'll get out of this musically, and... Did you get things out of that musically?
Out of the Police?
Yeah, that you might be doing on this.
I mean, the Police, that reunion was an exercise in nostalgia, you know, mm-hmm. pure and simple. Mm-hmm. A very successful mm-hmm. exercise in nostalgia. There was no attempt to take that somewhere else. You know, I think that we'd done all we had to do as a band. And so, no.
And that was Sting. Thanks for sharing that with us, Patrick.
Oh, thanks, Nathan. It was fun. I showed up at the studio, and he was, it didn't seem like he really wanted to talk at the beginning. He had his manager, who produced the record, play a few songs, and he sort of, I thought he'd sort of be talking me through the songs, but instead he went to the couch and took a nap.
That Sting would be talking through the songs. Yeah.
And so I was a little wondering whether he wanted to even do this, but then he kind of got up and started talking, and he sort of opened up over the course of our talk, and I came away really liking him again. So it was fun.
He's like a Navy SEAL. He can just sleep anywhere.
I know.
He's like a commando of rock.
I know. It's one of his many powers.
Well, that's it for Rolling Stone Music Now. If you like what you heard, please leave a review. It helps. You can do that at the iTunes Store or wherever you get your podcasts.